welcome to Souls on Fire with your host, Joe Trainer. Joe is a husband and father of three, and for 29 years was an award-winning and very successful college football coach. Today, he is the director of athletics for Pope John Paul II High School. He is a leader, a man of character, and filled with the joy of the Lord. Joe was running for God's heart and became a soul on fire. Listen in every Monday as Joe interviews other sports figures and businessmen and women who bring their faith into the marketplace. And now, here's Joe Trainer.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Souls on Fire this beautiful Monday afternoon, All Saints Day, the day after Halloween. Always a lot of great memories when you look back at the years you were out there hunting last night and going to church for the Holy Day of Obligation today. So I have special guest Bruce Robinson with me today. Bruce is the CEO and president of Independence Mission Schools, a nonprofit network of 15 independent Catholic schools providing transformative education to children of all faith in low-income neighborhoods throughout the city of Philadelphia. Really excited to have Bruce here, but let's begin, as we always begin every show, with a quick prayer. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. Heavenly Father, as Bruce and I spend the next hour in faith and fellowship, we ask that our thoughts be your thoughts, that our words be your words, and when we leave here tonight, that our deeds be your deeds. In your name we pray. Again, thank you to Peter Marcinko from the Knights of Columbus for sponsoring the show. Peter, your unwavering support is greatly appreciated. Please know how much we appreciate all you do for not just this program, but for In His Sign Network, and for all of us here. A hearty thank you. So, Bruce, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Joe. Great to be here.
I'm really excited to have you. What a I don't want to say it's a colored past, because you successful, 30 plus years in corporate America. Probably about 8 to 10 years ago, you make the transition to nonprofit after an incredible run in corporate America. Most recently, you had been the CEO and president of Balfour Beatty Capital Group, responsible for a $5 billion asset portfolio and $500 million annual revenue and $4 billion in publicly traded debt. Prior to that, you were at GMH Community Trust and GMH Associates in Newtown Square, where you served as the president of GMH Military Housing. At one point, you were the chief financial officer. But in 2014, you kind of make the shift midlife, and you become president of a Catholic high school in the Archdiocese of Philadelphia. Tell us how that played out.
So there was kind of an interesting segue in my life where I separated from my employer and was looking for something different to do. And, kind of bounced around a little bit trying to find the right thing. And really, I think there was a sign. I got an email from an acquaintance that said the Archdiocese of Philadelphia is looking for business leaders to run their Catholic schools with a president-principal model. And if anybody is interested, let me know. So that to me was
you were the right fit. Yeah, definitely.
That was the sign.
Sure.
And I reached out, and I think the interesting part of this story, which many people don't know, is I wasn't Catholic at that time.
Okay.
I was baptized in the Episcopal Church. That's where we grew up. I was married in the Catholic Church. My kids are all Catholic. I went to church with my wife and family every week, so people just assumed that I was Catholic. But when I went to Newman Goretti, I said, well, maybe that's the time that I should just formalize this.
Wow.
It just never became important. I was there. I just didn't take communion, but everything else I was, you know, a participant in the church.
That's a great story. And that's, there's no such thing as a coincidence, right? I mean, that's kind of cool. So that was right around when you got there in 2014. When did you become baptized into the Catholic faith?
2014.
That's awesome. What a great story that is.
Right. So I probably started in July, and at that point I just felt that, you know, leading a Catholic school, it was the right message that I was Catholic.
That's awesome.
So it was a good thing and a good part of my life.
That's awesome, and it's well documented. Obviously, I'm in out of Pope John Paul High School, and you know, you really brought that school, New Megretti, from the brink of financial ruin. I mean, it was, I know when you had left there in 17, it was on much more solid footing financially. And then with that comes the, you know, the academic profile and all of it. If you can get the finances right, more often than not, everything else follows suit, right?
I mean, the school really was struggling. And, you know, everybody looks at education like its own different type of industry, but it's a business. And when you're in a Catholic school, the business is education, and you're competing against public schools and charter schools. And you have to have a product because you're charging people, and the product has to be something worth paying for.
Sure.
So that's what we focused on. And, you know, we focused on how do we improve the quality? How do we make it worth paying for? And we were able to, you know, change the mindset of people in South Philadelphia, which is no small thing.
No doubt.
So it was really something that was, I think, a real successful venture. But after 3 years, I felt that that was, I did what I set out to do, and it was time to move on.
So. I gotcha. And then talk about, you know, your current job right now. How did that unfold? And was that a segue right from Goretti to Independence Mission Schools, or was there any time, transpired, you know, in between Goretti and Independence Mission Schools?
Right. There was probably about a year and a half, and okay. I felt like I probably had one more good run left in me. But I was just sort of poking around, and I got a call from a gentleman that had invested in the turnaround at Newman Goretti from Philadelphia School Partnership. And he said, look, the people at Independence Mission Schools are really struggling. Can you go and talk to them and maybe you can consult or do something with them? So when I went there, I was their fourth CEO in 6 years. So they were just sort of struggling from a network of just trying to keep these Catholic schools open to how do we make it an ongoing business.
Gotcha.
So I spoke with them and said, look, I can make this work. So I think it was a good fit and a good marriage. And the mission is just incredible. I love what they do. I've always admired what they did. The fact that they went into these neighborhoods where if they had not gone in, you would have just had vacant buildings in underserved neighborhoods, which is never a good thing.
No doubt. One of the challenges, I think, with all Catholic education today is, you know, we're educating the masses, right? And then also, you know, maintaining a Catholic identity. You know, we give access to everyone else. How is Independence Mission Schools, how are they able to navigate that, you know, that kind of slippery slope, but the mission is a Catholic mission, but we're educating people of all faiths. So is there any, how do I want to say this? Is there any evangelization there? We're doing the corporal works of mercy, and we're providing, you know, a great education and, you know, character formation, and as well as algebra and science and those things. How does that play out in Independence Mission?
So there's a little bit of all that going on.
Sure.
We do evangelize, but it's a soft evangelization.
Sure.
But what we also do is, you know, we just believe that gospel values transcend all religions. So when you look at the gospel values in the Catholic Church, there's nobody in the Muslim religion, Hindu religion, Baptist religion that are going to say, well, I don't believe in those values.
Sure.
So, you know, what we are trying to do is take all of our students and impart these values to them. And you know, as they continue to go through our network and move on to high school, we want them on the path to becoming productive citizens for the rest of their
sure.
lives. And, you know, we think that that's what we're able to do. So about 75% of our students are not Catholic.
Gotcha.
We do serve 95% students of color.
Gotcha.
So we are in, you know, very challenged neighborhoods. So we are, as you said, providing the Catholic missionary work of going in and helping others.
Sure.
That are less fortunate. But we do think that, you know, as we said, some evangelization goes on, but that is not our primary focus.
I gotcha. How is all of education subsidized? Is there any financial commitment that those individual families from those impoverished areas, or do they have to come up with anything from a tuition standpoint, or is it straight? Are you just strictly dealing with benefactors and donations, you know, to fund their education?
No, everybody has to pay, and you know, we think that, you know, that is sort of the Catholic
the
Catholic model. And,
sure.
And it's really important to us because it means that people that come to our school are engaged, and that's really important in a lot of these neighborhoods.
Sure.
Because the public schools, if they just go, or the charter schools, they're free, and if parents don't like it, it doesn't matter. But here, the fact that they have to pay something means that they have an interest in seeing their child.
Sure.
Have something that maybe they didn't have. So that's an important part. Our average cost to educate is probably around $7,000, and our average family pays maybe $2,000
gotcha.
Or less.
And which always, is probably a lot of money for a lot of those families, too.
It is, and it's broken down. We don't post our tuition because we think if we posted what our tuition is, that families would just say, I can't afford it.
Sure.
So it's always broken down into a monthly amount. So if it's $2,000, we might say, Joe, can you pay $200 a month? Can
gotcha.
You pay $175 a month? Because that's what families can relate to.
Sure. No, you got to break it down. Trust me, we're all living paycheck to paycheck, right?
Exactly.
So it's am I correct in saying it's 15 schools?
So we just merged two schools in South Philadelphia.
Okay.
So St. Gabriel's was about a mile away from St. Thomas Aquinas. They had declining enrollment. They had also had a very strong charter school right around the corner. And in without those charter schools, like the Catholic schools would be vibrant. But I think South Philadelphia has felt the impact of charter schools much more than any other neighborhood in the city of Philadelphia. There's some really strong charter schools that came into being. And they kind of suck the kids out of not only the Catholic grade schools, but then in turn, the Catholic high schools.
Sure, I bet. It's being at a Catholic high school right now, and then some of the closures last year with Bishop McDevitt and some of the other ones that were, you know, smaller enrollment. Like, you wonder, there's rumors that the diocese is going to get out of education altogether. You don't know whether that's legitimate or not, but... You know, I think there's going to be another constriction in the next. My guess would be there'd be another constriction from a high school standpoint, because of the viability of the business side of it. You know, there's putting people in seats, and there's also the component of paying the bills and keeping the lights on and paying teachers too. And I know we're at a point even now in suburban Montgomery County, we're talking pre-show, you know, you're in Mayfair and, you know, you had all those Catholic parishes in Mayfair, St. Matt, St. Tim's, and, you know, you went to St. Tim's, you were either going to, you know, if you were looking for a Catholic high school, it was probably, you know, it's Father Judge,
right.
You know, or, you know, and that's what you did. And now, you know, even out where we are, you know, the Catholic elementary schools enrollments declining, you know, pretty significantly. And, you know, you say, okay, well, where are we pulling these kids from? You know, and then I think the challenge, there's different challenges, you know, with urban education and suburban education. But, you know, the challenge with suburban education is you have a lot of really good public schools, too.
Right.
You know, so especially out where we are, I mean, you have Methacton and Springford and Perkiomen Valley and, I mean, really good schools with really nice facilities. And in some respects, it's, you know, you could argue that the challenges are just as significant out there in suburban America, albeit much different challenges, but as you have in metropolitan urban education, you know?
Yeah, I think there's, if you look, they have equal challenges.
Sure.
But there's different issues, right?
Definitely.
So in the urban areas, it's affordability. And that's a challenge, as, you know, the city of Philadelphia is probably 60% minority.
Sure.
And there's a lot of, you know, very poor people. It's you know, the poorest big city in the United States.
Sure.
When you go out into the suburbs, as you said, there's much more affluence, but there's much better public schools.
Sure.
So they're challenged with, you know, free and quality, and we're challenged with free and affordability.
Sure, no doubt.
So
let me ask you this. So, you know, the Catholic, it's probably been about 15 years with the president principal model in Catholic high schools. Would you say, would that be correct in saying that?
I believe so.
So was that a challenge? Or, I mean, in corporate America, you're coming from, you know, the CEO or the CFO, and the more, much more linear. But was the two-headed, you know, principal president model, was that something that was a challenge for you? Or were you just, you know, your focus was that so much outside the building that, you know, whereas the principal was more internal and you were kind of external operations?
So
how did that work out?
I think the way the Archdiocese drew out the playbook, they said, look, the president's in charge of fundraising, facilities, enrollment, and the principal's in charge of academics. And they kind of said to me, look, you don't have to do anything with academics. And my feeling was, this is a business. My product is education. I better have something to do with my product.
Sure.
If I'm dealing with everything but the product,
sure, yeah, this...
how am I supposed to fix the problem? So I worked very closely. We brought in a new principal. I worked very closely with him, and I was, you know, totally involved. He understood the nuts and bolts, but I sort of ingrained myself, because we did, you know, a very innovative type thing where we brought consultants in. We got the teachers union to grant us concessions, which had never been done at Catholic high schools.
Maybe never since either, right?
Right. But you know, the negotiation was, you know, we have donors that are ready to give money to help us turn the school around. But they're not going to give us money unless you provide us with some concessions. And my negotiation was, if you don't give us concessions, this school's probably going to close.
Sure.
And you're going to lose 30 teaching positions.
Sure.
So it was a little bit of a game of chicken, but it was true.
Sure.
So they, and the concessions they gave were, if you look at that, I'm just like, well, that's what every school should have.
Sure.
But for them, it's always been take, and you know, but I think the good story here is that we took a school that was absolutely on the ropes.
No doubt.
And I mean, I think the enrollment got down into, you know, the areas where, you know, a Hallahan and a McDevitt were when they closed them.
Sure.
And you know, today they're significantly higher.
Absolutely.
So we took a school that struggled, and they're now vibrant, which means those teaching positions are
stable.
So
yeah.
It worked.
Had you inherited a principal, would that have been a harder job for you, or was it because you were involved in the hiring process, did that make it a little easier for that to? Because you are, there is layover, there's carryover with both positions. Was that something that, you know, were you saying, oh man, I'm glad I have the opportunity to have my signature on the principal?
Well, there was a principal there, but I just said,
we're not working.
Yeah, we need to make a change. So I moved that principal into a different position.
Okay.
In the school, and then looked to bring in somebody that had expertise that could help me, because the academics were struggling at the school. And
sure.
We needed somebody that was willing to be innovative and try to enact change. And, you know, it's really funny when you're enacting change, like everybody is excited about change until it affects them. Then they don't want anything to do with change.
So true.
And I remember getting in front of all the teachers and showing them a chart and saying, 10 years ago, when the merger of Newman and Goretti happened, this is where enrollment was. And, you know, today it's half of that.
Sure.
So you don't have to be a math major. Do you know what happens if we continue on this, on this downward trajectory? We're going to be closed.
Sure.
So that's why we need to embrace change. So everybody's like, yep. And then when we said, okay, this is what we want, everybody said, no. But, you know, that's where we worked with the union. The union, you know, did agree and worked with us. And it was very interesting because we actually turned over 75% of our teachers.
Wow.
And, you know, so the when we brought in new teachers, we brought in a new attitude, a new culture, a new environment.
Sure.
And some of the teachers that stayed were, you know, were on board, and some of them, you know, were not. But there was enough of a critical mass of positive thinkers that we were able to move the needle positively.
Yeah. And I mean, I believe this more than any. Like, I think my daughter goes to Lansdale Catholic, and that's, you know, the building is kind of that traditional, you know, 1970s, 80s. You know, the facilities aren't, you know, necessarily state of the art, but their culture there is off the charts.
It absolutely is.
And I look at, you know, and you know, with your success in corporate America, like, culture is everything, you know, because of people, you know, if people, especially now when kids, first of all, kids, whether it's Goretti or PJP or wherever, kids and parents are willing to travel. You know, it's not like 30, 40 years ago where, you know, you weren't looking at, you know, you had two options if you were in the neighborhood. You were going to the public high school, or you were going to that lone one feeder school, you know, the Catholic high school, you know, within the neighborhood. But now people will travel, people have options. And, you know, if people, it's funny how, and again, I spent, you know, 30 years in college coaching. So questions that drives my wife crazy, but I'm always asking people where they went to high school, because I'm like, I feel like there's a pretty good it's a little game with me, because there's a pretty good chance I've been in that high school. You know, certainly if it's from Maine down to Florida and east to Pittsburgh, I've probably been in, you know, 95% of every high school in the East Coast. But you can tell, it doesn't take long. Like, you can feel the vibe when you walk into a school, Catholic or public. You can just feel the energy. You know, are the students happy? Do teachers like being there? You know, and that's such a huge thing, I think, in Catholic education, because, you know, you joke around, you get paid with mass cards and rosary beads. You're not getting a, you know, well compensated for a job that we all know is incredibly, not just incredibly important, but incredibly challenging too. And even more so now, because, you know, some of the, you know, I think the territorial nature of parents sometimes, you know, where it's like, you know, they don't want to relinquish control. I think 40 years ago when you and I were growing up, it was the village was raising the kid, and, you know, and if a teacher or a coach or, you know, your boss at the pizza place, you know, was firm with you, that was, they were really an extension of your father and your, you know, and an adult, you know, figure. But now it's like, yeah, we all have this very territorial nature. And but if kids are happy at your place and you have a shot, because you're going to be, you know, as you bring in prospective students on shadow days and that stuff, if kids are happy, then you have a pretty good chance of keeping enrollment, you know, stable, if not improving. And, you know, and culture is such a big part of that, you know?
Yeah, so one of the interesting things where we are located is that, you know, a primary focus of parents is the safety in the school.
Sure.
So for all those in the suburbs,
yeah,
they don't even think about that.
Yeah, a hierarchy of needs being met, right? Absolutely. It's as you're saying that, I'm like, wow, that's kind of like eye opening. It's like, you know, you don't, you know, everyone, you know, you talk about the robotics program or the STEM program, or no, is my kid going to be in a safe environment physically and emotionally? That's, you know, basic needs being met. It's kind of crazy.
Right. And, you know, if you go to, you know, public schools, you know, you have bullying situations, you have all these other just safety concerns. Kids have to go through metal detectors. things that we don't have at our school. And look, we have our challenges like any school does.
Sure.
But we address them and we work with families. And if it ends up being not a good fit, then it's not a good fit.
Sure.
But we certainly want a culture where kids feel happy, as you say. You know, if a kid likes to go to school, they're going to learn.
No doubt.
And, you know, that's sort of what we are trying to impart on everyone. And so the teachers, it's important that they like what they're doing. And it's important that we look at data and see our kids progressing. Because even though safety is important to the parents, how the kids perform is important to us. Because we want to make sure when they move on to high school that they are on grade level.
Sure. Let me ask you this, not holding the gun to your head, but, and again, this being, you know, potentially, you know, your one more, you know, your one more oomph in the 2 to 4 year or 5 year, not saying when your time at Independence Mission comes to a close, but is Catholic education sustainable in Philadelphia long term?
So, you know, one of the things that we talk about with board members is it sustainable with parents continuing to pay higher and higher tuition rates? And that's a challenge because as college costs continue to rise, every time there's a tuition increase, that becomes a tipping point for another set of families that say, I just can't do this anymore.
Sure.
So once again, whether it's in the city where it's an affordability issue and parents just say, I can't do it, or they get into a charter school and say, now I can save myself $150 a month.
Sure.
Or in the suburbs where they say, like, I can be putting that money toward a college fund as opposed to high school if there's a good public high school there. But where there is opportunity is with the government paying a larger portion of these kinds of costs. Now, Pennsylvania has a tax credit program that has grown significantly, but it's still nowhere near where, you know, what other states provide. Some states provide vouchers. Other states have much more robust tax credit programs. We're certainly better off than a New Jersey or a New York that has nothing. But I think that the ability of trying to continue to convince state legislators of the importance of funding this alternative education model is something that's really, really important and that, you know, people need to use their voices because school choice is really important.
Sure.
And if you look at where our schools are located, basically every one of our schools is located in a neighborhood where the public school is defined as failing by the state of Pennsylvania, meaning it's in the lowest 15% of schools in the state. So why would we sit there and say we're not going to subsidize letting that family go to a much better school? We're going to force them to go to this
Sure.
failing school. So it's about sort of the future of our city, the future
Sure.
of our state, the future of our country, to provide everybody with an opportunity for a great education. And, you know, if a Catholic school is terrible, that should probably be closed too.
Sure.
I mean, it's just common sense because that's how business works.
Sure.
But you know, the problem is the public schools, if, you know, they're just sort of protected and they're let go. And that's where I think the real shame of all this is.
Makes sense. We're going to take a quick commercial break, folks, but we're going to be back for the second half of the program with Bruce Robinson, CEO and President of Independence Mission Schools, after these brief messages.
My name is Peter Marsico, and I'm a proud sponsor of Kathleen McCarthy and Joe Traina's radio ministry. I am a general agent with the Knights of Columbus, servicing the state of Delaware and southern New Jersey. I lead a select team of financial professionals who serve the Catholic community. We teach Catholic families about the importance of financial planning and how to secure their futures. We have the highest ratings from Standard & Poor's and AM Best, and all of our products are Marley invested. You can contact me at my office for a free analysis at 609-335-5189 or email me at peter.marcico, M-A-R-S-I-C-O, at K-O-F-C, short for Knights of Columbus, .org. Take care and God bless.
Welcome back to Souls on Fire. I'm your host, Joe Trainer, with Bruce Robinson, CEO and President of Independence Mission Schools. Bruce, I say it often on the show when I have, especially when I have some people with the business background. The older I get, the more, it's easy to root for people that are able to overcome adversity, just because I think the human nature says that we all love the underdog and the overachiever. But the more the older I get, the more I'm impressed with people that are able to handle success, and there you are, if they're, 30 plus year in corporate America, handling a lot of money and really kind of, I heard this phrase in the last year, but, transitioning from a life of success to a life of significance, and I think I look at you and, the transitioning from, I would assume, and not being in athletics, that which gave me a little, a day-to-day juice and some jolt of energy, certainly throughout the day, and then being able to compete on the weekends. But was it, and I gotta believe, handling that type of volume, in corporate America, gave you, positive juice and negative juice, I'm sure, some anxiety along the way. But was it hard transitioning to, I don't want to say the flatness of education, but a little bit of like that non-transformative, yes, boom?
It was definitely a change.
Sure.
I think the nonprofit world operates a little differently than the for-profit world.
Sure.
The for-profit world, you look at the bottom line, it's all about getting that deal, closing the deal, selling the deal, everything about making the bottom line and making money. When you go into the nonprofit world, many of the people that work there for a different reason. So they may be qualified to go make money, more money somewhere else, but they believe in the goal, they believe in the mission, so they're willing to take less in order to be part of the right type of organization. So some of those folks may work a little slower. Some of the folks might work a little differently. But you have to respect the fact that they've made a decision to, take this nonprofit path. And so that was the adjustment that I had, just understanding it's different and to just recalibrate my own expectations.
Sure.
And my own sort of pedal to the metal attitude, saying, okay, we just have to move a little differently, but we can still certainly put goals up there and achieve those goals. It may just take a little bit longer or take a little bit different path to get there.
Sure. You talk about managing expectations, and again, safety, parents that are, that are looking at education options, where safety is like the at the foremost of their mind, is kind of like, oh wow, something you really can't appreciate being in middle class America with and having my children having benefited from middle class education. Is it, what, how do you, the test, the bottom line, there is a bottom line with education, right? It's meeting, standards and that stuff. And how do you manage expectation when some of these kids are just bringing so much, I don't want to say baggage, but so much, so many challenges to the table, just getting through an academic day, and maybe having to go home to, an environment where you might have just some chaos, you know, like, you know, and being in a lot of those homes over a 30-year, you know, education, 30-year career in coaching, you know, I was in some of those, you know, urban houses where it's just a lot of people living in a confined area, you know, with not a ton of positive energy or positive outcomes. You know, how do you manage the bottom line of testing, you know, so that there's a proficiency there, and okay, you know, a kid's coming to school and just left an incredibly chaotic environment, maybe unstable, and then in 7 or 8 hours going home to that same type of environment.
So you just have to acknowledge where they're coming from. But there's also really no excuses. So, you know, you still have to set a high bar and encourage the student that they can hit that bar and do everything you can to help them achieve that, because that's how they're going to break out of the cycle poverty. It's going to be through education. And, you know, the issue is, you know, they may be acting out. Now, are they acting out because they haven't eaten anything since yesterday at lunch? Did they see something at home? Did something happen? There's lots of different things, and we deal with that throughout all of our schools. Our students do bring trauma with them. A normal part of their everyday life could be gun violence. It could be drugs. It could be just the overall poverty and incarceration.
Sure.
These are all things that are just part of their everyday life that we in the suburban or, you know, the center city areas of the world don't really, you know, it might affect us tangentially, but certainly doesn't affect our everyday life like it affects our students.
Sure.
But there is... You cannot turn around and say, I feel sorry for them. So we're just going to like make
lower
it easy
the bar,
for
yeah.
them. Because when they go, we want our students when they go to high school to feel like they belong and to be able to be successful. And, you know, when I tell everyone, look, not everybody is cut out for college. And we acknowledge that. But you need to take a test. If you want to be a mailman, you have to take a test. If you want to be a policeman, you have to take a test. If you want to be an electrician or a carpenter, you have to take a test.
Sure. Competencies, right?
It's really important that the foundational education be strong. And that's what our goal is in our elementary schools, to just give them that good, solid foundation so that as they move on into high school, they're preparing themselves to have some options in life.
Yeah, definitely keeping the bar high. I mean, again, I say that transformative education is the only thing that will break cycles. You said that, and that is so true. It's because with education will come opportunity, stability, you know, and, you know, the goal for a lot of these, you know, people that are having these type of hardships that are coming to school, it's just you got to break cycles. You know?
That's exactly it. And, you know, it's very easy to say, well, you know, this school is not performing well, but, you know, we look at our population, and that's the excuse.
Sure.
And, you know, that's a fact. I mean, it's a reality, but it's not an excuse, and, you know, we can't make it an excuse, and we won't.
Absolutely. Talk about fascinating stuff with your, you know, with your conversion to the faith. So was it prior to you going to Goretti, was that something that you thought about, or was it just kind of like, was it, how long had you been discerning that conversion officially?
So I went to church. It was, I, as I said, I participated in everything other than communion. So it was just something that wasn't really necessary in my mind. But I did feel, you know, there was a couple reasons when I did convert.
Were you practicing? Did you grow up in a practicing Christian denomination?
Yes, the Episcopal Church. Yeah. Which is really like a half step.
It's Catholic light, right?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, no doubt. But your family was involved in the Episcopalian Church?
Yes.
Okay, awesome. Yes. Was that a hard... Just some of the dynamics with us older school people, You know, was that a hard conversation when you told your family that you were raising your kids Catholic?
No, not at all.
Awesome.
They could care less.
Gotcha.
But like I still remember, growing up, basically everybody went to Catholic school, and the old school people. I tell people I was a public. because that's what we used to be called. If you weren't a Catholic, you were a public.
Sure.
So I was a public growing up.
Sure.
But it was a very, it wasn't an issue with my parents or my family. And, when I did make the decision to convert, like, that was a very positive thing, too. Nobody really, it was like, great, whatever. Whatever you want to do is awesome. But I definitely felt there was a sign that maybe, the fact that I ended up in a Catholic school,
sure,
not being Catholic.
Which tells me about your acumen, your business acumen. You must have been one heck of a candidate, because for you and I know this because I've been on some committees when presidents were hired, for you, you must have had some major juice bringing to the table, because for you to have the ability I don't want to say overcome that, but kind of, really overcome that, the non-Catholic denomination, you must have been, a heavy hitter in corporate world.
Well, as we went through the process, I did say, by the way, I'm not Catholic. And Ed Hanway, who was the head of Faith in the Future, and Bishop Fitzgerald, who oversees all of education.
Sure.
And they kind of said, well, I think that's a great story. Here's somebody that's not even Catholic that wants to come in and help our schools. And, that was like another impetus to me. Like, they didn't judge me because I wasn't Catholic. Since that time, they have made a decision not to hire any non-Catholic. So I don't know, maybe
those were the committees I was on.
Maybe my position was a little bit too rough, but I understand they kind of felt that leading a school you should be of the faith. But when I was hired, they were happy because the school was on the ropes.
No doubt, definitely. Has much, other than you receiving the sacrament of the Eucharist, has there been anything do you feel like you've been able to deepen your faith in the last, 8 to 10 years since you've converted?
I mean, I just feel that the mission of helping others has just been so much further ingrained inside me. And, I worked in the corporate world and had success, and people said, what do you do? And you tell them, and they'd be like, okay. But you tell them you're working, trying to
save
lives. Inner city school, and people can't get enough.
Sure.
And they're so interested, and they want to know how they can help. And it's really a positive type of thing. So, for me, I'm doing it because, I'm benefiting as much as whatever expertise that I'm bringing benefits.
That's
like
awesome.
I'm getting so much out of this opportunity.
That's awesome. In terms of generating revenue for Independence Mission, is the focus more on like corporate companies? Is it individual philanthropists? Is it everything? And then how much of your job is in the as the CEO, are you like chief development officer for Independence Mission, where you're just constantly meeting with people, selling the mission, and kind of the old time Catholic extortion where you're holding a gun to somebody's head and saying, listen, write us a check.
Well, the best extortion is if you have the Catholic collar on. Because then everybody's afraid they're not going to get
sure.
a heaven.
We call that Catholic guilt, right? That's nobody's cornered the market on guilt like the Catholics.
I've spent some time, we just finished up a strategic plan. I've spent a lot of time sort of positioning the operations of the organization. But I have started to phase out that part and become more and more focused on the fundraising and the strategic part of the operation. So we do have a chief development officer who does a great job. But I need to be out there trying to convince people, yeah, and that it's a really good thing, and it's money well invested. And you know, it's very interesting when you talk to people in the philanthropy world. In the business world, you make an investment, and you say, "What is my return on investment?" Yeah. In the philanthropy world, they're looking for what are your goals, and you know, many people, as we talk to them, are saying, you know, where are your students? Where can you take your students? That's how we're going to gauge our return on investment. Mm. So we're going to give you metrics, and that's how we're going to judge you and judge your return.
So I got to think it's more of a relational component there too, as opposed to just a one and done meeting. If it's that detailed in terms of, okay, like there has to be, sounds like there's some follow up to that, no?
You know, in any business, including the nonprofit world, people invest in the leader.
No doubt.
And you can have the best product, but if you don't like the leader or you don't trust the leader, you're not going to want to put your money in. And the nonprofit world is really no different. So, you know, they have to look at me and say, he said he's going to do this, this, and this. Do I believe him? Do I believe he can do it?
Credibility, yeah.
And is that somebody that I feel is worth investing in? I like what Independence Mission School stands for, but can I get behind the guy that says he's going
to
do that stuff?
In terms of the salesmanship of your job, like how do you go about? Are you do you have, when you meet with people, is it just like, are you inviting them into the school? Are you kind of just throwing numbers at them? What is the salesmanship of your pitch, so to speak, when you're soliciting somebody for a transformational gift or a significant gift or, you know, something to sustain the school?
So the larger the gift, the longer the period takes.
Sure,
so,
no doubt.
You're not going to sit down and have one meeting and get a big gift.
Sure.
But you try to tell the story, and you try to, you know, talk about how these schools were going to close, how these neighborhoods, these are schools that have been in these neighborhoods for 100 years, and you know, this group of philanthropists came in and saved them, and we're doing really good things in the neighborhood, and let me tell you what we're trying to do to help these families, and let me tell you what we're trying to do to help these kids. It's a really great mission. You know, we would like you to help us, you know, support this mission.
That's awesome. Let me ask you this, because I'm going to sound probably ignorant which isn't hard, but so Independence Mission School is this consortium of 14 schools, okay? But they're not affiliated with the diocese, or are they affiliated with the diocese?
So we are affiliated. We rent our buildings for $1. And there's an agreement with the Archdiocese that we can continue to operate the buildings as long as they're run as Catholic schools.
Gotcha.
It's a very short operating agreement.
Gotcha.
One page. And we follow the Archdiocese of Philadelphia religion curriculum. Our students have religion every day. But we are independent. No different than, let's say, a St. Joe's Prep or
sure.
a LaSalle or a Jesus school.
Sure.
We are independent. You know, we, you know, have relationships. Bishop Fitzgerald sits on our board. If I have an issue or a problem, I can pick up the phone and call him, and he's always been extremely supportive and helpful. You know, back to my days at Newman Goretti and even at the mission schools, it's the same thing. But that's the relationship. So we are run independently, but we're still connected through the Catholic faith.
Gotcha. And is 14, 15 in that hovering around that number, is that I don't want to say this. Is that optimal? Would there be other candidates to kind of bring on board or of other Catholic elementary schools? Is that the sweet spot with that number? Would there be any other candidates would there be any other elementary schools that might have candidacy to become part of the Independence Mission?
I think there is really an opportunity to grow the network. What we can't do is take a school that is hanging on by a thread and losing a lot of money and believe that we're going to come in and change things because of how much we subsidize our current model.
Sure.
It's a difficult lift for us every year. But there's other schools. We invest a lot of money in our teachers. We invest a lot of money in professional development. We've brought on innovative English and math curriculums. So there's some opportunities for the right school where a pastor might say, hey, like, what would this provide me? And we can say, look, like, we can provide all the back office. We can provide professional development. You know, you can officially be, you know, if you join the network, if you just say, like, what if I just wanted professional development? You know, if you adopt the curriculum, because our development is based on the curriculum.
Sure.
We have, but we're happy to share. You know,
would they end up in turn, like, would they get, I don't want to say this. Is there not a competition with the Archdiocese, but now if would they have a problem with you assuming, for lack of a better term, ownership over an additional 2, 3, 4 Catholic elementary schools? Or would that be something that they would welcome?
I believe they would welcome it. One of the schools that is part of IMS, St. Raymond's.
Sure.
They voluntarily came in because the pastor said, look, we're fine right now, but I don't know if I'm going to be here in 5 years, and I don't know whether the pastor is going to be as involved as I am.
Sure.
And I want to make sure that there's always a school here. So he voluntarily said, I'm going to hitch my wagon to this organization.
Sure.
So I think the thing that people mostly should focus on is we're going to be running a Catholic school. And because of what we're doing, there may be a better opportunity for longevity when you're part of a bigger group than if you're part of a standalone entity. Because all the archdiocese grade schools are basically single entities.
Sure.
You got the parish and the school, and that's it.
Makes sense. Let me ask you something on a personal level. I mean, they said prior to you coming on board, you said there was four CEOs, presidents, and in a 6-year period, right, or something.
Correct.
Like that. Do you worry about, not that you're thinking of your exit strategy right now, but do you worry about somebody that doesn't have as much juice as you have? It's almost like, not that you built the business, but it's for those people that build the business from the ground up. You always hear that emotional attachment and then concern about who am I passing the torch to? To whom I'm passing the torch? Is it a little bit, do you worry about, like, with your, you were kind of like the perfect fit for this, right? You had the private sector success, and then you kind of got, you got, not indoctrinated, but you kind of got, you had the 3-year run at the high school level where you basically brought it from the brink of financial ruin and closure. You know, now it's like, okay, well, now here I am, as we both are on the back nine of life, right? You know, you're saying, okay, so, when I do think about the exit strategy, like, what happens to, is the model such, to make a long-winded question longer, is the model such that will the beat go on in 12 months, 24 months, 36 months, 40, when you leave, Bruce? Or is it still so fragile where it's kind of just like we're worried about what the future holds?
Now, I think what we have seen over the last few years is a board that had to jump in and be hands-on because they took over 15 schools that were ready to close.
No.
So whatever they had to do to make it work,
yeah,
is
stop
what they
the bleeding.
Did. Exactly. But the board has evolved and is evolving to more of a strategic board. So they're not getting involved in all the operating stuff and jumping in and doing things like that. They're supportive, but what they're doing is they're focusing on the bigger picture. So that's an important part of creating that, what do we do a year from now,
sure,
or 5 years from now. And, you know, we are building a team that, you know, once we set the team and the culture, it should continue to move forward just fine.
Yeah, you've stopped the bleeding, right? The bleed, you know, you're hemorrhaging when you first take over, you know, and then everyone is in the day-to-day because, you know, regardless of titles and involvement, you're like, hey, we need you to, you know, we need you to do, you know, more than your job description here. And then, well, it's a credit to you that, you know, you're at that point with your board and in terms of stabilizing it and now showing metrics and kind of, yeah, I think when you first got there, I would imagine you were really just selling a dream, you know, and a vision. And now you actually are showing like, this is what we're offering. This is what we're doing. Not just for Catholic education, but for the city of Philadelphia, you know, as you're trying to break cycles of poverty and you're trying to, you know, help young, you know, boys and girls transition to high school and the formation of life skills that's been developed at the grade school level.
I mean, I have an incredible amount of admiration for our board. If you said to somebody, we're going to take over 15 elementary schools, the buildings are falling apart, the enrollment is plummeting, and they're losing hundreds of thousands of dollars, people would say, I give it 2 years.
Sure.
And the fact that here we are 8 years in.
Amazing.
And, you know, we're in the midst of a $50 million capital campaign, of which we're over halfway there. We have a great strategic plan that has donors excited. It's just really an amazing kind of transformation, and it's really all because our board said this is something that we want to do and we think it's important for Catholic education.
That's awesome. How big is your board, Bruce?
There's probably about 16 people, okay. But there's an executive committee of about 8 people, and that's
gotcha.
Where a lot of the you know, decisions get made.
And what's the shelf life of your board members? Like, is it a term? Are you on for a certain amount of time, and then you're.
So we have terms, but not term limits. So there's a 3-year term, but at that point in time, we'll say, okay, Joe, we noticed that you haven't come to one meeting in the last 2 years. Like, maybe this isn't a good fit. Or, hey. Is this still giving you what you want?
Sure.
And that way, it's a convenient way to try to see if people are committed or not committed.
Stay engaged. You have, you know, the only way you're going to be an agent of change is if you're engaged, right?
But the other side, and you know, a lot of times people say, well, there should be term limits. But we have board members that give a tremendous amount of time.
Sure.
A tremendous amount of financial resources. And why would you ever say, like, your term's over?
Yeah. That makes no sense.
It makes no sense. And that's a pure business
decision. Sure, no doubt.
So, you know, you come to this happy medium of saying, hey, we can still get turnover because sometimes people just lose interest.
Sure, by nature, you'll have some.
And, you know, that's how we kind of calibrate bringing new blood into this
that's
organization.
Awesome. Bruce, this was awesome, man. I can't thank you enough for joining me today.
It's my pleasure.
Best of luck. You and Independence Mission will be in my prayers. And you're not just... you're changing lives, and that's pretty amazing. So as a Catholic father and diehard, you know, I think I'm a diehard disciple, I appreciate everything you're doing for our faith and the future of it.
Well, you know, kids are awesome, and every kid deserves an opportunity.
Absolutely.
And that's all we're trying to do.
That's awesome.
Things that we have taken for granted and opportunities that our kids have received.
No doubt.
We're not going to be able to balance that, but as much as we can give these other folks, it's going to benefit
all of us.
All of us. The city, you know, the world.
Absolutely.
So that's what we're trying to do, one little day at a time.
That's awesome. Folks, have a great week. God bless, and thanks for joining us. Take care.